Welcome to All Analytics Radio. This is Jim Connolly. I'm editor of allanalytics.com. Data science education is our focus and on the agenda today. As you may recall, you know, when we heard those predictions about a pending shortage of data scientists a few years ago, everyone jumped and took action. Employers broke out their checkbooks to pay data scientists big money. They also instituted mid-career training programs for existing employees. Universities built out data science degree and certificate programs. And some business intelligence and database pros even tweaked their titles and started just calling themselves data scientists. And journalists, well, we had something to write about for a few years. So once things got rolling and we tried to close this talent gap, it became apparent that no single entity could address the shortage on their own. The different constituencies needed partners. So universities and employers reached out to each other to work together to shape data science curricula and to place graduates in the workforce. Plus, tech companies provided universities with some of the technology tools that their students needed to further their education. Some of those partnerships will be on display next week when SAS kicks off its new Analytics Experience Conference. More than a dozen colleges will be on hand to discuss their data science programs with attendees and potential students. One of those schools is Oklahoma State University. Our guest today is Gautam Chakraborty, who is director of the data science programs at Oklahoma State. And he is someone who started building out that school's first data science program even before this talent shortage became big news. Welcome back to A2 Radio. Gautam, how are you today?
Hey, Jim. Thank you. I'm doing wonderfully well. Thank you for inviting me back.
That's great. Hey, before we get into the discussion, let me add a note for the listeners. You can post questions for Gautam and comments for your peers in the live chat box on the All Analytics Streaming audio page. I'll share as many questions as I can with our guest during the live audio session, and then we'll address a few more when he joins us for the chat session at the bottom of the hour. So let's get started. Gautam, look, can you provide an overview of the data science programs that you have at Oklahoma State?
Yes, Jim, I'll be happy to. As you pointed out, we actually started doing this not yesterday, not year before, not 3 years before, not 5 years before. We started in 2004. At that point, we used to run what we call a data mining certificate program. We did not have the word data science or analytics was not in existence. So we used to run it as a data mining certificate program where students will take, they'll go through their normal master's degrees, whatever the degrees they're in, but they'll take a focused set of electives that will teach them data mining. That's where we started. Today, we have a master's in business analytics degree, which is available, by the way, both on campus as well as online, a graduate certificate in business data mining, which is, again, available online, and a graduate certificate in marketing analytics, which is for MBA students who are not deeply trained in technical side. So those are the varieties that we have. We also have some SAS certificates, partner certificate, as a part of the business analytics degree. Students get a data mining certificate, a predictive analytics certificate, and a data science certificate. And these are sort of builds on each other. These are the three levels of the certificate. As they go through the business analytics program, they can earn those certificates as well. I know that's a lot, but that's our plate is very full.
Now, as I recall, you didn't come from out of what we would now consider a traditional analytics background. How did you get interested in data science?
That's a good question. So Jim, you're right, because my background, I was originally a mechanical engineer. Then I got bored and became a marketer. Then I got bored and I became a statistician. And then I got bored and became a PhD scientist. And then started working and teaching marketing research, those kind of areas. And then I recognized this need of applied analytics, call it analytics today. At that point, we were calling it data mining. And that's what, at its core, it's the problem solving that always interests me. And I think that's what attracted me to this field, is that at the end of the day, we are trying to do problem solving using data tools, technologies that we have, so we can add value back to the organization.
Now, as a what we'll call a career analytics person, how we hear from a lot of people now who maybe they come from an IT background, maybe they're in marketing or manufacturing operations or something like that. What do you recommend to people who want to make that bigger career shift? How can they get started with analytics?
So that's a great question. There are, of course, multiple ways you can go about it. One of the things that I believe that people need to decide is, do they have tolerance in their mind about programming and, you know, being deep in the technical side, or do they want to stay above the technical side yet want to understand what analytics and data science can do? Because based on that fundamental difference, are you going to go deep into the data side and actually do what we'll call ETL type of work, or at least be fairly comfortable with it, whether you do it or not, versus those who will say, you know, it's okay for me if I can create a dashboard using point and click, and if I can build, understand a little bit of modeling, I'm okay, because my goal is to be able to manage folks who will do the work for me. So you got to decide on which of these two routes you want to go. Based on that, I would suggest people need training. And, you know, you can do different types of training at the university. Almost all universities today have variety of options available. It doesn't have to be on campus. Of course, on campus is a possibility, but it could be offline, could be online, could be a degree program, or could be a certificate program. My suggestion to mid-level professionals is always, before you jump into a degree program, take a few courses as a part of a certificate and see if you like what you're getting into. Because, you know, on paper, everything looks good, but at the end of the day, unless you experience this is an experience good, really. I mean, it's hard to describe what you are going through until you experience it. It's kind of, you know, it's like a haircut. You got to have it sort of to understand how good that is, right? So I think my suggestion almost always is, you know, get your feet wet, you know, see if you like it, and then go deeper into it. And that would be my, I don't know if that makes sense to you, but that's the way I tend to say it.
Yeah, so get a taste for it initially.
Yep.
Now, I know that yours will be among a number of colleges that will be exhibiting at SAS Analytics Experience next week. How does the partnership between SAS and Oklahoma State work?
Oh, it's a great partnership. We are very, very happy and very grateful for the partnership with SAS. SAS provided us the software at a very academic price, basically, and also gave us a lot of course material from the time we started with SAS. So there's been a great partnership, and they're also on our advisory board, help us with curriculum. But, you know, our students are exposed to other programs as well. We live in what we call a multi-platform world. So, yes, we use SAS as our core platform, but the students are exposed to others as well. And the conference is a very big part of the type of things that we expose our students to. I truly believe the Analytics Conference is one place where you get to see what other folks are doing. And we take students to that conference, Jim, as you know. Many of our students present posters in that conference, and we want them to network. We want them to understand the real world that exists around analytics. It's not just building a model or a professor talking about some statistical or machine learning algorithm. No, there are people who are using this for real, and they're trying to solve real problem for real companies. And what a great place to get exposed to that at the Analytics Conference.
Now, you mentioned the posters. What do those consist of, or what do they show?
Which poster? Sorry, I missed your question.
Yeah, the posters that some of your students have developed and will be displaying.
Yes, so the posters are typically these are done by students from various universities, and these are focused on an application of analytics, a particular algorithm or a particular, it could be a comparison of multiple different algorithms on a data set that's of interest from a domain perspective. So we have, for example, I'll just talk about our students' posters. Our students have done posters using data from Twitter space by analyzing comments made by tweets by Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, for that matter. They have analyzed healthcare data. We have access to a very large healthcare database that we use called Cerner database. We have posters on that. We have posters on where students are forecasting using time series for publicly available data, such as census data and other Business Bureau of Labor Statistics data. So these are all applied paper, which is showcasing an application of analytics, and it's a great forum for students to show their abilities.
Now, the Analytics Experience Conference represents a new approach on the conference scene, you know, blending what used to be two co-located but separate events. What do you personally hope to learn this time around?
Oh, I'm delighted that the two are coming together because it's, you know, it used to be, as you rightly pointed out, the academic component was somewhat different from the business component. And I'm happy to see them come together because there are two fundamental things. One is the businesses need to see what the academics are doing and what this next generation of analysts, such as the students and others who are there, what kind of work they're capable of, what they're willing to do, and what they're able to do. So business need to see that. On the other hand, the academics and the professors like me and the students and other young professionals, they need to know that, you know, the high-level business folks who are coming to the conference, that they care. And they have a chance to interact with them. They have a chance to network. They have a chance to learn not just the modeling side, which they can learn in a classroom, but from a strategic point of view, the challenges that these leaders face in implementing analytics in their organization. It's very hard for a student or for that matter, for a young professional to understand some of those strategic issues sitting in a classroom. It's not possible. You got to listen to it from the horse's mouth. If you listen to a CMO talking about a problem of implementing, I don't care what model you build, if the model cannot be implemented, I can't do anything with it. Or even if you come up with a model, it doesn't meet compliance and therefore it cannot be implemented. These kind of things, you know, we can talk about it, but when they hear cases from the CMOs and the CAOs and the CDOs, that's beautiful. That I think this is wonderful to have the two mix together.
Yeah, it seems like it really comes down to that key step that often is missing in technology, which is when the technologist doesn't have really understand how their work is going to be used in the real world. So it sounds like they're going to be exposed to that in this case.
I certainly hope so because they have got some real, you know, I have been on both sides of this. I have been in the academic conference. I have been in the what used to be PBLS and the executive side of this. And there are some beautiful topics in the executive side that I'm really hopeful that the students and the young professional will learn a lot by understanding some of those strategic issues that is very hard to understand unless you hear it directly from the people who have experienced it.
Now, having been to some of these events, I know that the college displays tend to be kind of clustered together so that you're next to your Oklahoma State rivals in football and other competing programs. I'm sure you share experience with them. How does the spectrum work in terms of how many of the programs these days are super tech heavy versus the others that may be more business oriented, more business heavy. How do you strike that balance, and how do you see your peers in the educational community striking that balance?
That's a great question. Partly it depends on the resources, and by resources I mean faculty and teaching resources available within a university. Partly it depends on who is the target audience for the university, in the sense that, you know, where are you getting your students from? What kind of background do they come with? And by resources, I mean, you know, what's the core capabilities of your faculty, the faculty that you have, or sometime we go out and get adjunct faculty. So, but fundamentally, the issue is, do you want to go deep on the technical side, or do you want to remain at a surface level technical side, but more into the business side? I would say for the last time I looked at this number, and it was a couple of months ago, I think there are about, Jim, if I'm not mistaken, there are about 140 universities that are offering some form of MS in business analytics or MS in data science or MS in marketing analytics, combinations of this. I am not 100% sure as to what percent of these are deeply technically focused, but I would say probably 25%, and the rest are probably not so technically focused. Even within the technically focused, there are two tracks. Are you technically focused primarily on the programming database side, or are you technically focused both the programming database as well as statistics side? So it's an interesting, we have an interesting mix. In fact, in a couple of months, we might be able to actually give you an exact answer for it, because we're doing a survey right now in the middle of analyzing this data of all the universities that have these programs and classifying them into those groups. But I don't have the numbers in front of me right now to tell you. But we do talk. We do, you know, most of the directors do know each other, and we do come together and discuss our challenges and how we go about solving them. So we have a fair idea of what the others are doing.
Now, I know that some of the programs are very heavily oriented in terms of getting their students out into the actual, you know, into internships or working on special projects with, say, local employers, or these days with the web, not even local anymore, working with live data on live projects. Is that something that's in your program, or is that common?
Yes. In fact, that's probably one of the key issues in any good analytics data science program, that the students have to work with live data, live projects with the companies, whether through internship or through a project that they work on a semester or a year-long basis. In my program, the business analytics program, we do both. Students work on internship, the traditional summer internship for 3 months. They go and work with companies. They also work on a live project as a part of their practicum, that they would have to work on a project with a company that provides data, and most of the time is local companies, but sometimes we do outside local companies as well, as you pointed out. And then we also have sort of what we call a co-op kind of arrangement, that the last semester of the program, the students so choose, they can go work 40 hours a week for a company and take a course online to finish it up their degree. So yes, it's very well in our program, is very well baked into, because I think the philosophy that we all believe in to a large extent is that you can talk about data analytics, you can talk about data science, you can make them do some work using, you know, simulated data or even real data, but which has been cleaned up and in a textbook kind of situation. But unless they get their hands dirty, unless they realize how bad it is sometimes just pulling the data together from multiple sources and then trying to understand what the relationship between them, unless they realize that in the context of a business problem, in a real-world situation, it's hard for them to appreciate what the techniques really do? And I think that's a key issue that most universities have recognized, and we have certainly built it in through all of our programs, and others as well. Many other universities do something very similar.
When you hear back from people who've graduated and have gone out in the workforce for a little while, what do they, if they get back to you, do they ever say, I wish I'd learned X? Do you adapt your curriculum based on stuff like that?
Great question. Interesting. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We do hear that. We do hear that, I wish I learned this. Okay. So the way we do this, Jim, just, and again, I think we're not the only one, others who are doing something similar, but we have a very strong advisory board of companies, and advisory board of companies are companies that participate on a advisory board meeting, which we hold every year in the month of April, May on campus. So they come to campus and we talk about our curriculum that we are going through that year. These advisory companies also hire our students, both as interns and full-time. So they actually know what kind of training we have imparted to them. And we sit down with them and say, okay, you know, what is your Christmas wish list? Both from a company point of view, and we bring in some of the alumni from our program as well, that now that you have been there, tell us what's your Christmas wish list and things that you ought to have known. And then we sit down with the advisory board company saying, look, we can do, you know, some of these we have the capabilities, some of these we don't have the capabilities. So we'll reach out to our advisory board saying, hey, can you guys help us provide, I'm just taking a name, okay, a training with a Hadoop platform, because we don't have it, or things like that, okay? And oftentimes what we do is we create, our curriculum is very flexible. There are certain electives and components that we can switch around. So there are some core components which are fixed, but there are moving parts in there, and those moving parts are short courses that we bring in industry professional saying, okay, Mr. X from such and such company will come and talk about pricing analytics. Mr. Y from such and such company will come and give a training on using Hadoop on an Azure platform or something like that. So we do that, and our advisory board companies helps us, and our alumni gives us the feedback, and that's how we pull it all together.
You know, I think if you ask most professionals how they feel about, you know, going back to a school, whether it's college or even high school, and giving a presentation on how things are done in their business, the vast majority of the people enjoy it. You know, I've done it professionally, and it's amazing, you know, the questions you get from students and the insight you get from students. So it's a very rewarding experience. So I recommend that to the listeners. If you get a chance, you know, get out to your community college or your local universities and just see how you can share your expertise. Good time. We do have a question here from the audience, and it gets pretty specific. Feel free to field it. In your view, which colleges and universities produce a large pool of highly qualified students with skills in computational linguistics?
Ooh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. As far as I know, so we'll have to define what you mean by computational linguistics. If it is, I'm not sure if I understood the question correctly, so I don't want to give a wrong answer, because computational linguistics might mean different thing to different people.
Okay.
So I'm not sure.
Well, let me ask the contributor here, AW2016, if you have any more detail, that'd be welcome. And see if we can narrow down the question a little bit. What are some of the key trends that you see now in how we are preparing the next generation of data scientists? How's that changing?
Interesting question. Good question, Jim. Several things have changed over the last, I would say, 2-3 years. One is the rapid change and emergence of multiple platforms. It's very hard today to keep track of all the platforms and the algorithms that keep coming up, and it's hard for professors, it's hard for industry professionals, it's hard for students. So it's almost you for training data scientists and analysts for next generation, it's almost you prepared them for something very basic, prepared their baseline very well so they understand the fair, they have a fair knowledge of statistics, a fair knowledge of operation research, a fair knowledge of SQL programming, SAS programming, R programming, a fair knowledge of visualization software. But then you reach a point when you say, okay, I really, the rest of it, you really have to learn on your own. All we can do is create the base and then give you, direct you to resources that are available online or resources that are available within the university or outside the university, where the onus is now on the students to go learn, get deeper training in the areas that they need to, because otherwise it's impossible with all of the things that are coming around. By the time university can react, things have moved on. So we really have to have that very flexible, modularized approach of training, along with a very strong base that you create. And then that's part of the core curriculum that most universities try to do. And then leave the electives and other things for the students to pick and provide resources so they can go in the right direction.
Now, you know, we talked about the talent gap. And if we think back 4 years, I guess it is, since McKinsey came out with their report, you know, citing the shortage of data scientists. What a lot of people lose sight of is the fact that there was an even greater shortfall of managers who are going to be equipped to participate in data initiatives and to do data-driven decision-making. What kind of efforts do you see in the universities these days in terms of broadening the adoption, or at least the understanding of data in non-data science majors?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, yes, so if you go back to the McKinsey study, if I recall correctly, it was like 10 times higher number of managers would be needed who do not have to be data scientists, who do not have to be a programmer or a deep knowledge with respect to statistics or algorithm, but they need to be able to understand, appreciate what analytics and data science can do, and maybe do some of the analysis on the fly, but not necessarily build a deep model. And that's sort of what McKinsey talked about. And what we are seeing now across universities is the MBA program, the traditional MBA program on the graduate level, and the traditional MBA programs are pulling in some form of analytics data science training into the MBA curriculum, be it as a part of a core set of electives, be it as a certificate. So, for example, in our university, we have an MBA program where one of the concentrations or options in the MBA program is marketing analytics. Now, marketing analytics will not teach you how to do SQL programming. It'll not even teach you how to do SAS programming. But it'll teach you enough so you can manage other analysts, and also you using point-and-click interface, you can do basic analysis, even some sophisticated analysis, some visualization. But more importantly, the appreciation of what data can do and what kind of questions to ask to your analyst, or how to evaluate what you get from a data mining analytics software. Those are the kind of things that are taught. And these MBA students often don't have any technical background. They have come with absolutely non-technical background. So they're not interested in learning technical programming, but they're interested in getting trained into analytics. And it is possible to do so today. We're not the only one. We are certainly doing it. There are other universities that are also pulling this back in. In fact, this week we started talking about making this analytics training a core requirement of even undergraduate marketing majors. So I'm hoping that, you know, we're in the process of discussing this at the university level. We have come to the conclusion either undergraduate marketing majors. And normally you think undergraduate marketing means it's offside. No. Undergraduate marketing majors, when they're now going into jobs, they're being asked to look at data. They're being asked to look at dashboards. They're being asked to look at interpreting dashboard trend lines and things of that nature that they're not always comfortable with or not haven't been trained with. So we are thinking of incorporating analytics right into the undergraduate marketing curriculum as well.
Okay. Kutan, we're actually we just hit the bottom of the hour here, so we're going to, in a minute, we're going to shift over to the live chat. Before we do that, though, if you could let people listening and then maybe repeat in the live chat, how can people learn more about the Oklahoma State program?
Oh, thank you very much, Jim. The easiest way to learn about our program is the website, which is analytics, one word, analytics.okstate.edu. And I'll repeat that in the chat. It's one, analytics.okstate.edu, and that is linked to all of our programs.
Great. Thank you, Gautam. This has been a very informative and, I think, entertaining discussion. So as we wrap up the audio portion of our discussion, I invite the audience to stay with us on the live chat, where Gautam will spend a few minutes addressing your questions and comments. And I see that there are some fresh questions in there now. To conclude, I want to thank Gautam Chakraborty of Oklahoma State University for being with us today. Thanks to all of you for joining us and to SAS for sponsoring this event. Gautam, have a great day, and everybody in the audience, have a wonderful rest of the day and rest of the week. Thank you.
Jim, thank you very much. I'll be logging in.